Chapter 26 Verse 1 There was a famine in the land, aside from the previous famine that had occurred in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar. Isaac was on his way to Egypt in search of food in a time of famine, just as his father Abraham did. He stopped in Gerar on his way, believing he would be treated well there, since Abraham had entered into a contract of peace with the king of Gerar. Genesis chapter 20, verses 14 through 18. What does belief in God mean? Verse 2. The Lord had appeared to him and said, "Do not go down to Egypt. Stay in the land which I point out to you." That is, in the land of Israel. God spoke very similar words to Abraham when he told him to go to the place that he would show him. Genesis chapter 12, verse 1. For both men, it was a test of faith. In Abraham's case, the test was to go to an unknown land. In Isaac's case, the test was whether he would trust God to provide food during a famine. When we moderns speak of faith or belief in God, we are almost always referring to belief in God's existence. Do you believe in God means, do you believe God exists? That is never a question in the Bible. Therefore, God was not testing Isaac or Abraham before him with regard to faith in his existence. That would have been absurd. Who, after all, was speaking to them? The faith issue concerned God's promises, not his existence. Throughout the Bible, God's existence is a given. Faith, therefore, always refers to acting upon a belief that God will do as he promises. The more precise English word would be trust. Verse 3, Reside in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. I will assign all these lands to you and to your heirs, fulfilling the oath that I swore to your father Abraham. Verse 4, I will make your heirs as numerous as the stars of heaven, and assign to your heirs all these lands. Humanity will be blessed through the Jews. Verse 4 continued, So that all the nations of the earth shall bless themselves by your heirs. The purpose of the Jewish people is to serve as a vehicle for God's blessing of the world, a theme that is stated 5 times in Genesis, chapter 12, verse 3, chapter 18, verses 17 through 18, chapter 22, verses 16 through 18, Chapter 26, verses 3 through 4, Chapter 28, verses 10 through 14. That God wants a people to bless all mankind is another unprecedented idea in the Torah. Many Jews, including those far removed from Jewish religious faith and practice, continue to believe in a universal mission for Jews. A good example was Walter Rathenau, the German foreign minister during the Weimar Republic. The German democracy that existed between the two world wars. Do you know why we Jews were born into this world? In order to call every human being to Sinai. You don't want to go there? Well, if I don't call you, Marx will. If Marx doesn't, then Spinoza will. If not Spinoza, Christ will summon you. Rathenau's statement helps explain why Jews have disproportionately founded, led, or been involved in utopian causes such as Marxism and socialism. They have been influenced, often not consciously, by the Bible and Judaism's universal mission. However, nearly all of these Jews dropped commitment to God and Torah, and often wound up doing more harm than good for both humanity and the Jews. Jewish idealism without God, Torah, and Israel, the three components of Judaism, has often been destructive, sometimes murderously so. At the same time, Judaism without universal concerns has also not helped the world or fulfilled God's mission for the Jews. Jews need to take the Torah to the world, and neither drop it nor hide it. Verse 5, Inasmuch as Abraham obeyed me and he kept my charge, my commandments, my laws, and my teachings. The prominent medieval commentator Nachmanides, Ramban, explained this verse in this way. My charge is faith in divinity, that he believed in the unique God, and that he kept this charge in his heart, and he differed from the idolaters about it, and called in the name of the Lord to bring back many to the service of God. My commandments is like all that he had commanded him in Go Forth from Your Land, and with the raising of his son for a sacrifice, and the sending away of the maidservant and her son. My ordinances is going in the ways of God, to be graceful and merciful, and to do righteousness and justice, and to command his children and his household about these things. My laws is circumcision on himself and on his children and servants, and all of the commandments of the children of Noah, as they are the law to them. Verse 6. So Isaac stayed in Gerar. Verse 7. When the men of the place asked him about his wife, he said, She is my sister. For he was afraid to say my wife, thinking, The men of the place might kill me on account of Rebekah, for she is beautiful. This is the third time this situation arises in Genesis. First with Abraham in Egypt, then with Abraham in Gerar, and now with Isaac in Gerar. As in the incident with Abraham, the king is named Abimelech, but given that many years have passed, this is likely a different King Abimelech, perhaps the son of the Abimelech whom Abraham had encountered. Verse 8. When some time had passed, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looking out of the window, saw Isaac fondling his wife, Rebekah. The word translated as fondling, mitzhachek, many translations say caressing, derives from the Hebrew word for laughter and depicts erotic activity. The Torah has a realistic attitude towards the erotic. It does not consider it dirty, but rather as a part of life for enjoyment, in permitted ways, of course, and not only for procreation. Here, we learn a little more about Isaac. Whatever passivity he may have exhibited elsewhere, Isaac seems to have been a passionate husband. Verse 9. Abimelech sent for Isaac and said, So she is your wife. Why then did you say she is my sister? Isaac said to him, Because I thought I might lose my life on account of her. Verse 10. Abimelech said, What have you done to us? One of the people might have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us. On trusting strangers. Verse 11. Abimelech then charged all the people, saying, Anyone who molests this man or his wife shall be put to death. This episode seems less dramatic than the previous two. There is no kidnapping of a wife, no gifts exchanged, no punishment is inflicted on the ruler, and there is no divine intervention. Perhaps this king, if he wasn't the same man with whom Abraham dealt, knew of or remembered what had happened with Abraham and Abraham's God, and did not want to invite trouble on his kingdom. We assume Abimelech made this decree to protect Isaac and Rebekah, because in Gerar, as in most places in the world, it was not uncommon to kill strangers and take their wives, which would mean Isaac's fear was legitimate. As we have seen throughout Genesis, for example, chapter 19, the stranger was rarely treated decently in ancient Near Eastern societies, or as far as we can ascertain, anywhere else in the world, which makes the repeated Torah injunction to love and protect the stranger all the more remarkable. One of life's puzzles is to know when one can trust a stranger. My own attitude has been to trust strangers in good societies unless they exhibit, through dress, speech, attitude, and of course behavior, reasons not to trust them. It is better to risk disappointment than never to trust. However, when visiting less decent societies, it may be wiser to be wary of strangers. One of the terrible evils of immoral governments and of crime-ridden societies is that they cause people to trust almost no one. In communist East Germany, for example, it is estimated that up to 2 million people out of a population of 11 million were secret police, Stasi, or unofficial informers working for the regime. Verse 12. Isaac sowed in that land and reaped a hundredfold the same year. Isaac was the only patriarch who engaged in agriculture. He was an unusually productive farmer and businessman, as related in the following verses. Verse 12 continued, "The Lord blessed him." To envy or to emulate the successful? That is the question. Verse 13, "And the man grew richer and richer until he was very wealthy." Verse 14, "He acquired flocks and herds and a large household, so that the Philistines envied him." Verse 15, "And the Philistines stopped up all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of his father Abraham, filling them with earth." As unlikely as it may seem, these three verses are among the most important in the Torah. They also demonstrate why the Torah is as relevant today as it was 3,000 years ago, because it illuminates human nature, and human nature doesn't change. These verses encapsulate Jewish and human history. Instead of emulating the successful, most people envy them, and then often wish to destroy their wealth, and sometimes even them. The most notable exception to this unfortunate rule of human nature has been the American people. Until almost the present day, Americans tended to react to people who had attained material success not by resenting them, but by wanting to know how they could emulate them. This seems to be changing as more Americans join others in resenting the economic success of other people. Like the Philistines here, most people would rather fill the wells of the world's Abrahams than learn how to dig wells with water. The envy of Abraham, Isaac, and their descendants is the theme of an important book by a major thinker, George Gilder. Titled The Israel Test, the book documents how envy of Israel's accomplishments has animated much of the hatred directed at the Jewish state. That envy has also been a significant factor in Jew hatred for thousands of years. Verse 16, "And Abimelech said to Isaac, 'Go away from us, for you have become far too big for us.'" This story is a paradigm of much of Jewish history. Jews arrive somewhere as strangers, become economically successful, and then are considered a threat to the original inhabitants, who then expel and/or kill the Jews. Verse 17, "So Isaac departed from there and encamped in the Wadi of Gerar, where he settled." Verse 18, "Isaac dug anew the wells which had been dug in the days of his father Abraham, and which the Philistines had stopped up after Abraham's death, and he gave them the same names that his father had given them." Isaac used the same names to make clear that the wells belong to his family. Verse 19, "But when Isaac's servants, digging in the wadi, found there a well of spring water," verse 20, "the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, 'The water is ours.'" The herdsmen of Gerar could, of course, have tried to learn well-digging techniques from Isaac's herdsmen, but instead they became jealous and resentful. Verse 20 continued, "He named that well Esek because they contended with him." Verse 21, "And when they dug another well, they disputed over that one also, so he named it Sitna." Verse 22, "He moved from there and dug yet another well." Isaac was apparently a peace-loving man. Each time the herdsmen of Gerar disputed his claim after Isaac's men did the work, he moved away and dug another well. He was not a fighter like his father Abraham, see chapter 14, or his son Jacob. Verse 22 continued, "And they did not quarrel over it. So he called it Rehoboth, saying, 'Now at last the Lord has granted us ample space to increase in the land.'" Verse 23, From there he went up to Beersheba. Verse 24. That night the Lord appeared to him and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. God introduced himself by referencing Isaac's father because the familial and tribal characteristics of religion were, at that point, meaningful to him. Before the Torah, no religion had posited a universal God. Verse 24 continued, Fear not, for I am with you, and I will bless you and increase your offspring for the sake of my servant Abraham. Once again, God says, Do not fear. As noted in the commentary to Genesis chapter 15, verse 1, this is the most frequent statement of God to man in the Hebrew Bible. Verse 25, So he built an altar there and invoked the Lord by name. Isaac pitched his tent there, and his servants started digging a well. Verse 26, And Abimelech came to him from Gerar, with Ahazeth, his counselor, and Phicol, chief of his troops. Verse 27. Isaac said to them, Why have you come to me, seeing that you have been hostile to me and have driven me away from you? Peacemaker though he has been, Isaac finally had enough of the aggression and stood up for himself. Verse 28. And they said, We now see plainly that the Lord has been with you. And we thought, Let there be a sworn treaty between our two parties, between you and us. Let us make a pact with you. Verse 29, That you will not do us harm, just as we have not molested you, but have always dealt kindly with you and sent you away in peace. Given that Abimelech's herdsmen had dumped dirt into Isaac's wells, this was hardly a truthful statement. But it illustrates two common and unfortunate human traits. One is to rewrite history, to distort or even lie about the past in order to look good. The other is to assume that our motives are disinterested and pure, when in fact they rarely are. Even when they are pure, it is actions, not motives, that matter most. And here, only once they realized God favored Isaac, verse 28, did their actions improve, if not their motives, which remained purely self-interested. They wanted to protect themselves against what they recognized as a superior force, the God of Isaac. Verse 29 continued, From now on be you blessed of the Lord. Verse 30, Then he made for them a feast, and they ate and drank. Verse 31, Early in the morning, they exchanged oaths. Isaac then bade them farewell, and they departed from him in peace. Verse 32, That same day, Isaac's servants came and told him about the well they had dug, and said to him, We have found water. Verse 33, He named it Sheba. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. Verse 34, When Esau was 40 years old, he took to wife Judith, daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Basemath, daughter of Elon the Hittite. Verse 35, And they were a source of bitterness to Isaac and Rebekah. By taking wives from among pagan tribes, Esau confirmed he was unworthy of serving as the heir to the religious heritage of Abraham and Isaac.